Trend number three, venture capital comes back from the brink. The return on venture capital investments was at its highest in 1996 during the tech boom IPO wave. But most recently, the industry average return was minus 10%. In more than 60% of VC investments, the principal is lost altogether. Another way of looking at the risk is this. Just 3% of all VC investments account for more than half of all the profits made by venture capitalists. These statistics aren't being ignored by the people from whom venture capitalists get their money, limited partners, which are often the endowment funds for big universities. The major universities have great pools of cash to invest on behalf of the school, and in the past they have turned to venture capitalists to help them invest. Today, these fund managers have turned sour on VC due to poor performance. Historically, the way this business worked was that limited partners gave cash to the venture capitalists, who in turn gave it to someone who was starting a new business. Once the business got on its feet, there would be an initial public offering of stock, and everyone would happily cash out as investors rushed to get in on the next big thing. But IPOs are becoming increasingly rare. For example, in the 1990s, there were about 120 IPOs each year. In 2009, there were only 8. Fundraising for venture capitalists is at a 5-year low, following a 68% decline to just $95.8 billion in 2009. Of course, the 90s were hardly what we would call a normal market. At the peak of the tech boom, companies with only $50 million in revenues could launch an IPO and get $300 million back from investors, even if they had showed no profit. The investment banks that broker these deals now require that a company have revenues of at least $150 million and be able to channel at least $50 million into free cash flow before they'll consider an IPO. This has both good and bad effects. In the longer term, it means that healthier companies are being offered to the public for investment opportunities. In the short term, it means that many companies that have been developed by venture capital firms must tough it out on their own for much longer before the venture investors can cash out. In the old system, the limited partners simply transferred the risk of venture capital to the public and made off with the cash. Now they are being held to account, and not that many startup companies can meet today's standards. An additional burden to startups that want to go public are the Sarbanes-Oxley requirements. It costs about $3 million to comply with them, which means on average that a startup will have to generate an extra $25 million in revenue to offset that cost. On the other hand, in this atmosphere of bargain hunting, the big technology firms are using their combined resources of $150 billion in cash to cherry-pick the best of the new startups. But consider this fact. The driving force behind venture capital has always been new technologies. In the 1940s and 50s, it was the mainframe computer. In the 1980s, it was the personal computer. And in the 1990s, when the internet came of age, the VCs jumped in with both feet, investing in software, fiber optic cable, hard drives, routers, consulting firms, and any business model that ended in .com. In the wake of the fabulously successful public offering of Netscape stock in 1995, the IPO market exploded. Then, of course, the whole game ended in the tech meltdown, and in the first decade of this century, no such game-changing technology has appeared. Investment in VC funds was off 39% in the first quarter of this year, dropping to $4.3 billion, down from $7.1 billion for the same quarter a year earlier. Because many VC limited partners are university endowments, those funds were hit hard. Harvard's lost 30% of its value, making the job of raising new capital that much harder for venture capitalists. Even so, the Huffington Post reports that some individual venture capital firms are raising larger war chests than ever, with NEA recently raising $2.5 billion, Norwest Venture Partners garnering $1.2 billion, and Coastal Partners getting $1.1 billion. And this may be the glint of future dealings that we're just beginning to see. Venture capital is not going to go away. No one else can supply the second-round funding that startup companies need. The sums are too large for individual investors to handle. Looking ahead, we offer these five forecasts for your consideration. First, in the short term, some of the opportunities traditionally seized by venture capital firms will be addressed by groups of high net worth individuals known as super angels, who will help entrepreneurs build new businesses. The average capital available to these individuals doubled during the decade from 1999 to 2009, from $15 million to $30 million. The number of funds run by super angels went from 100 to 300 in the same period. Many of the people involved in this type of investing come from successful high-tech or financial firms, so they have had real-world experience at figuring out how to start a winning company, and they are tied into a network of experts who can help a startup. Moreover, angel capital is cheaper. Venture capitalists generally charge a 2% management fee and take 20 to 25% of the profits. Angels don't charge fees and take a smaller piece of the pie. Second, the larger venture capital firms already mentioned, such as Norwest Venture Partners and Kosla Partners, will have the advantage of a shrinking field as more marginal VC firms close their doors. We are in the middle of a great shakeout in the VC market, so there will be many losers and has-beens. But as a few of the strongest players start to prove themselves again, this could set the stage for a resurgence. The surviving firms now have better opportunities than any time in the past two decades. Because there are fewer firms bidding up prices, the cost of making deals is lower, and it is easier to assemble the best talent in a slack economic and employment market. Third, a lot of venture capital will go overseas until the American market heats up again. India is the place to go for great deals in software and business process firms. China has huge hardware capacity, semiconductor manufacturing and logistics. NEA has put its people on the ground in India and China already. Norwest has opened an Indian office and is eyeing China for a potential presence. Norwest has also put its money into three Indian companies, the National Stock Exchange, On Mobile, and Shriram City Union Finance Limited. Norwest also invested in Borks Incorporated, a new mobile software company in China, and Vinod Khosla is putting money into clean technology in India. Those companies and many others in emerging markets seem to represent some of the best new opportunities for venture investors. Fourth, it's quite possible that the entire venture capital market could be jump-started on the basis of just a single major IPO. A herd mentality exists among VCs, and their stampedes are often triggered by a single big deal leading to more me-too investing. Look for a possible IPO from Facebook or the electric car company Tesla Motors. Just as Genentech spurred the VC boom in the 80s and Netscape did the same in the 90s, if Facebook or Tesla or perhaps a dark horse goes public and sees its stock price continue rising, the venture capitalists will start investing again. And fifth, in the longer term, a new technology will change the game. The history of the civilized world has been marked by the emergence of new technologies that change the world. There is no reason to expect this pattern to end now. Look for such a technology to emerge in the second decade of this century and be prepared to take advantage of the opportunities it presents. We particularly call your attention to the 9 most promising technologies as identified by the trends editors. 1. Cheap, ubiquitous, and reliable mobile application platforms that will fully leverage GPS, RFID, and video technologies. 2. Nanoscale materials, which will dramatically improve our quality of life while minimizing resource consumption. 3. Personalized medicine, including adult stem cell therapy, artificial organs, and individualized diagnostic tools, preventive care, and treatments. 4. Distributed power technologies, including the smart grid, traveling wave nuclear reactors, and hydrogen fuel cells. 5. Quantum computers with a single machine in 2020 exceeding the combined power of all computers today worldwide. 6. Synthetic biology, which we'll explore more fully later in this issue. 7. Automated real-time language translation, eliminating a major barrier to global economic integration. 8. Neuromarketing, which will enable firms to optimize their offerings to meet the subtle psychological needs of consumers. And 9. Special purpose service robots, likely appearing first in the elder care markets in Japan and the EU.